You are about to witness history in the making. Despite the world's highest living standards, the average American remained vaguely discontent, aware that his goal of a better way of life had still not been fully realized. There was something missing.
There's this awful gap in our lives just because we don't have... Oh, but why talk about it?
It's just that... Oh, I keep hoping someone can find a way to...
Don't be a fool, Mary. You know that's impossible.
Oh, I know. It's just that...
Gad, it's ironic. With all our technology and industrial know-how, we still don't have the one thing that could give us a better way of life.
It's the Forgotten Filmcast.
Mother thinks she'll give the guests a choice of Coke or milk. When you can offer guests a choice easily, it's a gracious gesture.
Welcome to episode 184 of the Forgotten Filmcast. My name is Todd Liebenow, and thanks for joining me for this look at the movies that time forgot. On this episode, I'll be joined by Chris Iannacone from Get Me Another to discuss a 2000 film in which a major star parodies the action roles that he would start taking many years after this film. Starring Liam Neeson, Oliver Platt, and Sandra Bullock, directed by Eric Blankeney, it's Gunshy. But first...
But really, you can't help getting into situations where petting's likely to start. When you're dating a car, at the movies, even in your own home, watching...
The Forgotten Filmcast.
No, that's not big enough. No, that's not big enough either. That's more like it. We're delighted to have you with us, and we extend a cordial welcome to you. We've lined up the top stars from Hollywood and from all over the world to entertain you on our giant screen with the new, colorful motion pictures you've been hearing about and reading about. To add to your enjoyment, we're all wound up to bowl you over at intermission time with live wire service at our snack bar, where you'll find a tempting variety of favorite foods and beverages. Your continued patronage is very, very welcome.
Hi, folks. I'm Rico.
Oh, Nacho.
He's Peppy.
Si.
You can find us at the concession stand in the lobby.
Along with all sorts of other tasty goodies.
Si.
Rico's Nachos, a refreshingly new and different snack discovery. Chock full of high-quality ingredients, crisp, fresh tortilla chips, covered with creamy aged cheddar cheese, topped off with zesty jalapeno pepper rings. Rico's Nachos, out of sight.
Remember, folks, we're the new star at the snack bar. Rico's Nachos, a new taste treat you can't beat.
See?
Rico's Nachos, on sale at the snack bar now.
Drive away your worries and cares at this drive-in theater, where you will see the finest motion pictures of all time, soon to be released. Drama, comedy, adventure, excitement, something for everyone. Here's a brief glimpse of some of the truly fine pictures we've scheduled in the near future.
Rico.
Remember when roller skating was a lonely sport? The skaters were discreet. The skates were obsolete. And the background had no beat at all. Well, times sure have changed. Welcome to Skate Town USA, where boy meets girl in a celebration of love on wheels. From coast to coast, rock and roller disco is the most. The most fun, the most excitement, the most beautiful girls, the most outrageous guys. The most daring encounter between two rival champions.
Skate Town, a new place to boogie. Put on your dancing wings.
And the most fantastic music. All come together in the greatest story ever rolled. Big stars get down, and new faces turn around in Skate Town USA. The world's biggest, funniest, toughest, loudest rock and roller disco movie ever imagined. Skate Town USA. It's heaven on wheels, and it's heading your way.
And now, on with the show.
How are you feeling?
Fine.
Oh, and so chipper, too. What did he prescribe for you?
Oh, I don't know. What the hell are you doing?
You ingest that crap, and in 6 months we'll be fitting you for a colostomy bag.
You are a deranged lady. Would you please stop the car and let me out?
Why am I deranged? Because I don't take the orthodox view of healing?
Good. You don't take an orthodox view of driving either.
Nice reflexes. Listen, you clearly don't know anything about drugs, okay? They're killers. I bet I can alleviate your stomach pains in 2 weeks. Huh. In a month, I'll have them cured. No chemicals involved.
You think so, huh?
Oh, what? You think I'm just a nut?
Yep.
Ah. But am I an attractive nut?
Extremely.
So come on, it's 2 weeks. What have you got to lose?
I can't.
Oh, please. Hey, I can make a better diagnosis than that doctor I work for. You want to know what's wrong with you?
Sure.
Fear. I can see it in your eyes. You're absolutely consumed with terror, and it's eating you alive. And if you don't get it under control, you're going to shit yourself to death.
Okay, what do you have in mind?
Well, I could take you out for an herbal happy hour, and we'll have some libido-building health food.
I'm tempted.
Good deal. You're on the road to recovery.
Okay, our movie this time is Gunshy from 2000. And joining me to discuss this film is Chris Iannacone from Get Me Another. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, Todd. It's very exciting to be here. Very exciting.
Well, it's great to have you on. Your show is a recent discovery of mine, so I am thrilled that you accepted my invitation. Why don't you tell folks a bit about yourself and about your show?
Well, first, thank you very much. I'm glad that you're discovering the show. It's always good to hear that people are. I co-host a podcast called Get Me Another. And what we do is that in each series, we examine a blockbuster film, what made it work, what was the impact that it had, and why. And then we explore all the films that followed in those blockbusters' wake and tried in one way or another to replicate their success. So for our first series, we looked at Tim Burton's Batman. And subsequently, the films like Dick Tracy, The Shadow, Spawn, and other films, and how did Batman influence those movies? How did they differ? And how do cinematic trends evolve over time? One of the things I really love about our format is that we cover a wide variety of genres. So far, we've done series on Batman, Star Wars, Boys in the Hood, Halloween, Conan the Barbarian, and right now we are in the middle of Get Me Another, When Harry Met Sally. So it's an exciting show, and we really enjoy doing it.
Yeah. Well, I'm really enjoying it, and I've always been one of those people, you know, someone that watches a lot of movies. Yeah, you definitely catch on to those movies that you go, oh, well, they're clearly trying to get some of that Batman money or whatever, you know. And I think I discovered your show at just the right time, because I discovered it as you're doing the Get Me Another Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's just something about those 80s sword and sandal flicks, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, I don't know. I mean, what for you is it that just makes those movies? I mean, it's clear some of them are not going to be the caliber of Conan the Barbarian, but what draws us to those films?
Oh, yeah, because Conan the Barbarian is an extraordinarily high-quality movie. Like,
it's
really
amazing.
Well-made.
Yeah.
John Milius was incredible, and it was just – he was at the peak of his powers at that point. And a lot of the films that followed were – not as good, but some of them are a whole lot of fun. So there's one or two that are real, you know, not that great, but even the ones that are clear imitators in that genre, it's hard not to have a good time.
Right.
So even the, you know, something like, you know, Ator the Fighting Eagle, which was an Italian knockoff. We just took there was something so charming about it that we kind of fell in love with this silly Italian Conan knockoff. And you know, the Beastmaster is a terrific movie. I think it really works when you can feel. You can really feel the lineage of that first film in the movies that followed it, which is why we start with Batman, because the 90s, you know, for example, were replete with those. They didn't quite do other big comic book movies, but instead it was like, oh, hey, let's draw from old pulp and radio shows. And it's like, oh, that's such an interesting choice. So, again, we get to have a lot of fun. Like I said, we're in the middle of Get Me Another When Harry Met Sally right now, which is a great change from Conan the Barbarian. And this summer we are gearing up for Get Me Another Indiana Jones, which is going to be a blast.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, well, you got to do that with another Indiana Jones coming out. So.
Absolutely. It's, you know, sometimes you look at it and say, hey, it's in the zeitgeist, and, you know, we'll take advantage of whatever internet searches people are doing.
I mean, jumping back to Conan real quick.
Oh, sure.
Those movies just, I don't know, there's just something so wonderful. I mean, it's the type of thing where, yeah, they don't necessarily have the budget that a movie like Conan did, but you see just this wonderful earnestness about them, you know, they're trying to pull something off. And a lot of times you look at, I you know, you remember looking at those boxes on the video store shelf.
Oh, yeah.
And the posters with like the Boris Vallejo art and things like that.
Oh,
and it's like,
absolutely.
You're going, this could never live up to the poster art, you know, like,
oh my God.
The one I always remember, I think you covered it, was Sorceress.
Oh, yeah. Sorceress, which was a Roger Corman film. And, that is bonkers, that movie. Like, that is a crazy movie.
And yeah, you look at the poster.
The poster's great.
And it's got that, it's got this lion with bat wings. And I'm going, no way there's a lion with bat wings in this movie.
Oh,
but there was.
And it doesn't quite live up to what's on the poster, but it is a blast anyway. I mean, you said it just a minute ago. Like, there's an earnestness to those movies. There's something, they're not trying to make, it's just, there's something so genuine about them that they are, I think they just, you know, they just, they're so entertaining, and they're just trying so hard to be entertaining. You know, some of them are ridiculous, some of them are less so. But even the, like, Sorceress is a perfect example of a movie that is bonkers. It is absolutely bonkers, and it is entertaining as heck.
Now, before we get to the movie we've got here today, you skipped over that you've done some offshoot episodes lately, and I'm really intrigued by those too, because it's not just get me another, but you've also gone to don't get me another.
Don't get me another. Yes, our sub-series of don't get me another, which is we look at a movie that didn't have a big impact because it was a box office disaster. But that doesn't mean it's not a terrific film. Our first Don't Get Me Another episode was Don't Get Me Another Ishtar.
Of course.
It was a movie that I had never seen all of it. I'd seen it in pieces, but I didn't really have the full effect. And my God, it's a delightful film. Like it's, I understand why it didn't make money. It was a movie that should never have cost as much as it did because they had to go, they went and shot in Morocco. Now, that movie cost as much as it did because the Coca-Cola company had money that it couldn't get out of Morocco. So it said, well, go shoot in Morocco. At the time, the Coca-Cola company owned Columbia Pictures. And so therefore, they're shooting in Morocco, you know, with actual like unrest around them instead of shooting in like Arizona.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy. But there's something so, again, there's an earnestness to that movie that is so genuine that it totally charmed us.
Oh, yeah. It's been forever since I've seen it. Honestly, after listening to that episode, I was like, I need to look at this again. But, I mean, I remember seeing it back in the day. I seem to remember it was one of those that my parents brought it home from the video store. And I was like,
nice.
What are you kidding? This thing's supposed to be terrible. But, you know, you watch it. It was like, well, that's not so bad. That's kind of funny, actually, you know. So,
yeah. And, you know, it's trying to capture the spirit of the old Bing Crosby, Bob Hope Road movies. And you can see it was one of two movies around that time that were trying to sort of be the new version of that. The other being Spies Like Us. And I'm like, man, if Ishtar had taken off, we could have had a whole array of road movie comedies.
Yeah, no, I love those Hope and Crosby movies too. So
absolutely,
that would have been great. Well, let's get on to our movie here today. This is called Gunshy. It's from 2000, which I'll just throw in. This officially makes it the second youngest, I guess, is the way to put it, film we've ever covered on this show. I mean, we've gone way back to the silent era and such, but
sure.
You know, when I first started the show, I was kind of like, all right, well, let's. I guess we'll cut things off at the 90s. We need to have some age. But, you know, we've been doing the show for several years now, and now we're into the 2000s. And the only show that's younger than this is we did Brian De Palma's Femme Fatale, which I think was 2002. So
I just bought that very recently on Blu-ray. I think Shout Factory's got a Blu-ray of it, and I pulled the trigger. I've actually never seen it, so I got to check out your episode, and then I'll check out the movie. Or
awesome. Well, this film, it's written and directed by Eric Blankeney, and this is to date the only feature film he's directed. This is a guy that's mainly known as a writer and director for television.
But some great television. Oh, my goodness. Like, he was a writer on Moonlighting. He was a writer on Crime Story. He was a writer on Wise Guy. I mean, those are three fantastic 80s shows. And eventually he was the showrunner on 21 Jump Street and created the Richard Grieco spinoff Booker. And yes,
right.
This was his only feature film directorial effort to date. But man, I wish he'd made more because I really like this movie. It's really fascinating and weird. We'll obviously get into that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, speaking of things that are forgotten, I mean, you know, when I saw he created Booker, I was like, oh yeah, Booker, that was on for like 6 weeks or something like that. But now, probably the more notable name, though, behind the camera is that this was actually produced by Sandra Bullock's production company, Fortis Films. She is in the film, though she's not the headliner here.
No.
She's definitely a supporting player, but I mean, this is interesting just in the history of the films that her production company produced, because, you know, if you look at what came before this, it was some pretty big films that were definitely Sandra Bullock vehicles, things
sure.
like Hope Floats, Practical Magic, and then Miss Congeniality, which was a monster hit.
Miss Congeniality 1 and 2.
Yeah. So this film is coming after Miss Congeniality, and it just kind of did nothing. You know, like we said, it's kind of, you know, very different than those previous three films.
Well, it did so little that I was texting my co-host on Get Me Another Rob, and I said I'm going on the Forgotten Film Cast, and he said, well, what movie are you talking about? And I was like, Gunshy from 2000. He's like, it's so forgotten, I've never even heard of it.
Yeah. So this film, it centers on a guy named Charlie Mayo, played by Liam Neeson. He is an undercover agent for the DEA, but he is struggling recently with his job.
He's having a hard time, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, his most recent case, it involved trying to nab a drug dealer who's played by Taylor Negron, and it ended in a bad way. Basically, Charlie, his partner ends up dead, and he ends up being served up naked on a platter full of watermelon. So, yeah,
yes,
not pleasant.
And just he's about to get killed when the DEA storms the place and kills nearly everybody inside the Miami residence where this is all taking place. So he had a very traumatic time.
Yes, he's understandably got some issues going on right now.
Absolutely. But I want to, before we get further into the film, and I want to talk a little bit about my encountering this film for the first time, because I think it's something, there may be something that we've lost in this age of streaming and on demand and so many things being available, because that is the magic of discovering a random movie on late night cable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because that's how I found Gunshy. It came out in early 2000, but I didn't see the movie in the movie theater because, frankly, nobody did. But sometime in the early aughts, I had graduated from college. I was in that in-between space between college and the world, and I was living with friends, and I can't remember what movie channel it was on. It was HBO or Showtime, whatever. But we came across this random movie one night, and we didn't catch it from the beginning. We had no idea what it was. We had never heard of it. And my roommates and I were just sucked in. And it was for a while, like, that we were living in this apartment in Boston, and it was just in heavy rotation on whatever channel we had. And we just kind of watched it over and over again. And it's a movie that is well suited for that, because when you see it more than once, you discover the little moments and the details. And this is a movie that lives in the little moments and the details.
Oh, yeah. Well, and, you know, you talking about as being discovering it on late night cable. I mean, it seems like that perfect kind of late night cable movie, because it's a movie that it plays with a bunch of your expectations, and parts of it seem familiar, but then it's also a bit off kilter. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's very off kilter. I mean, truth be told, it's not a movie for everybody. I should say that right from the off, because it's quirky and weird, and it's got a sensibility about it that some people are just not going to connect to. But the people who do connect to it, they will really love it.
Yeah. All right. So this guy, Charlie, he's had this bad experience. He's having all kinds of issues now with anxiety, and this is also leading to physical issues. Let's just say, you know, serious flatulence, stomach issues, that type of thing.
Gastrointestinal issues. And the movie is upfront about it. It's not like, now, there's nothing gross in it. It's not like, oh, yeah, I got to watch Liam Neeson poop himself. You're not going to get that. But there's a frank discussion of, you know, some of the issues, some of the physical issues he's having brought on by his anxiety. I mean, when we're first introduced to him, he's on the floor of a stall in a bathroom airport, basically having a nervous breakdown as he tries to rehearse what he's going to say to his DEA bosses as he tries to convince them to allow him to retire. He has a place by the sea that he wants to go, and he just wants the ocean view. I've given him 18 good years, and I want the ocean view.
Yeah. And of course, the bosses aren't going to let him go. He's got to soldier through things. He ends up getting a psychiatrist, a guy that he actually meets on a flight. He ends up in a group therapy thing going on. But then, of course, he's got to start a new assignment. And it's this complicated money laundering scheme involving drug dealers and the mob and all kinds of stuff. A number of different shifty characters. The most mysterious among them is this hot-headed, low-level mob guy named Fluvian Nestra, played by Oliver Platt.
Brilliantly played by Oliver Platt.
We'll get into Oliver Platt here more in a bit, for sure.
So, yeah, there's There's basically there's the Colombian drug cartel represented by Fidel Vilar, who Jose Zuniga plays him, and then the mafia is represented by Fulvio Nestra, played by Oliver Platt. And Fulvio is a low level mob guy who's getting the chance to oversee this big deal on account of being married to the boss's daughter.
Right.
And the first time we see Fulvio, he is threatening to cut off a neighbor's hand because he thought he stole his newspaper. And yes. it's an extended scene where it's just the two, it's Fulvio and the neighbor, and they're talking. He's like, you can leave a bag of money on a table in Saudi Arabia and no one will steal it. Why? Because respect for the law. They know that if you steal, you get your hand cut off. And he's literally got an axe and he's going to cut the guy's hand off until his wife comes in at the last minute and throws the paper saying, "Oh, I found it behind the garbage cans." And he first, he doesn't believe her. He's like, "Oh, did you go out and buy that because, you didn't want me to see cut the hand off?" And she's like, "I'd crawl behind the garbage can to get your paper. Oh, my, you calling me a liar?" And what one of my favorite lines, I'll be quoting this movie all day long. "No, I ain't calling you a liar, honey. I'm just saying you got a big heart."
Yeah.
But Fulvio, like Charlie, and like most of the people in this movie, he's deeply unhappy with his life.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, everybody in this movie's got issues.
Everybody except the Sandra Bullock character. That's she's the only one, and she gives enemas for a living, so I guess she's doing okay. But, everybody else is deeply unhappy. And yes. And he dreams of gardening. He wants to spend his time gardening, but he can't grow a tomato. And even his wife says, Italian who can't grow a tomato? You ever heard of that?
I can't grow anything. I can't even make the grass grow in my yard. So, Now, you mentioned Sandra Bullock. We need to throw in, there's this one last element of the film, and that is that Liam Neeson's character, because he's having all these gastro problems and such, he's going to various doctors, and he has to go and get an enema, and that is where he meets this free-spirited nurse, or I'm not exactly sure what her medical profession is for sure.
She describes herself as the enema queen for whatever.
Exactly.
That is.
That's an official term, I guess.
Be one of the most unusual meet cutes of all time.
Oh, I can't think of another meet cute that involves an enema. Come on.
He's telling the guy, because he goes to therapy with this doctor, and then the doctor kind of brings him into a group therapy, and the guys in group therapy, are kind of a continuing group of characters we see throughout the movie. But it's the guy's like, he's like, "I met this woman the other night," and the guy says, "Oh, well, did you score?" And he says, "Well, she gave me a barium enema." Well, I guess that's scoring. Yeah. it's a strange. I got to say, it's just such a strange movie, and it stuck with me. I had not watched it in a number of years. Like, I saw it a ton when we saw it on cable in the early aughts, and then I hadn't watched it for a while. I had it on Blu-ray, but I hadn't, cracked it open yet. There's a Kino's put it out on Blu-ray, and I was like, "Oh, well, I'll throw this as one of the options for the show." And I was like, "Oh, I guess it's time to revisit Gunshy," and it didn't disappoint.
Well, and I got to admit, this is a film that was completely off my radar until you put it out there as one we might consider discussing. I mean, when I looked it up, I saw the poster image and I was like, "All right, I've seen that floating around on Letterboxd or I don't know what, and I just had always kind of filed that in my brain as another Liam Neeson actioner, right. type of thing, because the poster image doesn't indicate that it's a comedy.
It's kind of bland. It's basically, I don't know if you watch the trailer, because you can find the trailer on YouTube.
Yeah.
The trailer is terrible. It is an absolutely terrible trailer.
The trailer made me laugh because I pulled it up. And so the first thing you see on there is the Hollywood Pictures Sphinx, which I've always been interested in the output of Disney's other studios, Touchstone Pictures, Hollywood Pictures. So the Sphinx comes up. I'm like, "All right, Hollywood Pictures, I'm intrigued." And the trailer's going along, and midway through the trailer, when the narration comes in, the announcer says, "Touchstone Pictures presents." And I was like, Disney didn't even know what studio they were releasing this under.
That is amazing. That is absolutely amazing. I could see how just from the surface would be like, it's another Liam Neeson action thing. But so much of it is about subverting that. I mean, first of all, the fact that he's in therapy, and this movie came out in 2000, so it was right around the same time as The Sopranos, and there was a movie, Analyze This, that came out, right. Both of which had criminals who go to psychiatrists to deal with mental health problems. Now, Charlie, the Liam Neeson character, is an undercover cop, so he's on the other side of that line, but criminality and psychiatry, all of this was in the zeitgeist at the time. And what I think it really has to do, what this movie's really about, is these traditional ideas of masculinity and the failure of those concepts to deal with our fears and traumas that we wrestle with. And to have Liam Neeson play this the lead role, I mean, Liam Neeson is about as modern of a masculine figure as you can get, like in a non-ironic way. And, you know, he's a strong, silent type, but in this movie, he is a complete wreck. Yeah. Like, his performance is like the human expression of an exposed nerve. It reminds me a little bit of him in Darkman, to be perfectly honest.
He's
kind of like just on edge all the time. And it's, you know, and it's really an interesting performance and subverting that typical Liam Neeson image.
Well, and what's interesting about that, too, the more I thought about it, I was like, Liam Neeson is actually taking a jab at these type of characters that were going to become his stock and trade. But this is really before that happened.
Yeah, because this is before Taken and all those other, like, you know, Liam Neeson tough guy pictures. It's like, he needs the money, or he's doing it for the money. Because he clearly, you know, this is a project that clearly nobody was doing for the money. They do it because they wanted to do this script. And it's very much, taking those characters that he would come to embody down. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, because I think really Taken, you mentioned that one, is the film that really changed the trajectory of his career. And that's still, 8 years away at this point?
Yeah, I think Taken was 2008. And of course, now there were three Taken movies and a bunch of other movies where he played what were kind of Taken-esque.
Right.
You know, he had a number of other movies where he played basically the same part.
And I think that what he's doing here is really interesting, because it's a comedic performance, but I also kind of struggle to say that, because it's not goofy.
No.
There's a believability to everything he's going through, yet it's still very funny. And it's like, I don't know that I've ever seen anyone deal with what essentially at times in this film are fart jokes, which with the coolness that someone like Liam Neeson does. You know?
Absolutely. There's a deadpanness to his character. Like, early in the film, he's at the DEA headquarters, and he's assigned a young agent who's going to follow him. And he's like, listen, I don't want to see you. If I could see you, the bad guys could see you, and I'm blown. And then, you know, the guy just says, well, you know, I'm so excited to work with you. You're one of my heroes. And I love he looks the guy back in the eye and totally straight says, who are your other heroes? And it's just like, well, that's a good question. When someone says, oh, you're one of my heroes, well, who are your other heroes? What company am I in? The guy is like Keith Richards or something.
Keith Richards.
Then, of course, then he has to go off to find the bathroom because it's out of order. I mean, it's a fascinating little, it's weird and it's quirky. And it's just a curious little gem of a movie. And in some ways it makes me a little sad, because it feels like the kind of movie that doesn't get made much anymore. It's too offbeat for a major studio now, because, you know, as you mentioned, it's Hollywood Pictures or it's Touchstone Pictures, depending on if you listen to the trailer or you watch the logo. But either way, it's a Disney film, but Disney doesn't use those labels anymore, because that's not what they're making. But at the same time, it's not surrealistic enough for an outfit like A24. It's not that kind of picture either. And it's kind of in between. And it's just the thing that kind of doesn't get made. And it makes me a little sad, because, you know, it makes the film landscape, the cinema landscape, a little less, you know, rich and varied.
Well, that was the great thing about those studios that Disney had, I think, is that they did do things that were risky, you know, and I mean, granted, I mean, you know, they were the kings of doing things on a small budget and, you know,
sure,
not putting a lot behind it. But for every Ernest Goes to Camp they released, they also released something that was like, wow, that's pretty innovative. That's pretty interesting, you know.
And just don't shoot it in Morocco and spend $50 million on it. There you go. I mean, that's the thing. If you spend the right amount of money, you can do okay. I mean, it's one of those movies. Again, like I said, I did not see it in the movie theater. I don't think anybody did, but it played the heck on cable. And again, where you sort of see things over and over again, you catch movies in pieces, and it was just like, oh wow, this is really, really fascinating. And
even if you caught this in pieces, I mean. I mean, what stands out to me is, well, we hinted at this earlier, but we got to talk Oliver Platt, because
Oliver Platt is amazing in this movie.
He is the MVP of this movie by far. And again, it's a performance that just really toys with your expectations. You know, he's playing a gangster, which, you know, mob guy. I'm like, all right, Oliver Platt is a mob guy. I'm in, you know, that's enough for me. But I love where, you know, it's kind of the opposite side of the coin, you know, in terms of what Liam Neeson's got his anxiety and things he's dealing with. Oliver Platt's character has got things that he's dealing with as well.
Oh, yeah.
And in some ways, I almost sympathized with him more, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the best things about this, some of my favorite scenes. I mean, you mentioned the bit with the neighbor axe and the missing newspaper and all that. And it's a great scene. And it gets 10 times better when the wife enters the scene.
Oh, my goodness.
And
yes.
The wife is played by, I think it's Mary McCormick.
Mary McCormick.
Who I always remember, she played Howard Stern's wife in Private Parts.
She did. She was on the West Wing for a time, I think.
Unrecognizable in this.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, my gosh, that's the same lady. But when she comes into that scene with the newspaper, it just gets elevated, you know, you know, and it's wonderful. And there's several more sequences where you've got Oliver Platt interacting with his wife, and it's like, man, this guy's got it hard. I mean, she is tough.
She is tough. Yeah, absolutely. Like she's the boss's daughter. That's the thing. He married the boss's daughter, and the boss doesn't even like her. Like, you know, there's one scene where he's talking about, like, I'm sitting, you know, the boss, who's played by Frank Vincent, who was in Goodfellas, was on The Sopranos. He had a career playing mobsters and was absolutely authentic. But, you know, there's a scene where he says, oh, I'm sitting here with my demented psycho killer, with this some demented psycho killer who married my demented psycho daughter.
He tells him not to have kids.
Yeah, do the world a favor, don't have kids. I mean, it's amazing. One of the scenes I want to talk about, because I think it illustrates all. There's a scene, the first big meeting of this group that's pulling this money laundering price fixing scheme. And the details of the scheme, you know, you get a little of it, but it's not really important. But they're having the first big meeting, and this is the first time Charlie meets Fulvio, and it is fascinating. You have this meeting where Charlie is basically unable to function, so he takes too many of the anti-anxiety medication that his doctor prescribes, which makes him very sleepy. And the meeting is almost over before it begins, because the Wall Street guy brings out all these girls who are, you know, at a party, and the Colombian drug dealer gets very upset, because he's like, well, this is a stereotype. I'm trying to avoid stereotypes. I need to look good for my father, who runs the cartel, and apparently this guy is not the favorite son. And, you know, the showdown is averted, and then they have this meeting, and everybody goes off and parties, and Fulvio and Charlie are just sitting there staring at one another. And Fulvio is trying to read Charlie's eyes. And Charlie, for his part, is just trying to stay awake because he took too much of the anti-anxiety medication. And Fulvio has one of those lines that I swear to God, my wife and I have been quoting for 20 years, where he says, maybe you got that weird sleepy disease, narco-sleepy. And Charlie, for his part, just falls asleep in his chair, and Fulvio is just like, Fulvio's got a gun in his face, and Charlie just falls asleep on him, and Fulvio just looks at him and says, I wish I could sleep like that.
Yeah. And he thinks this guy is just, you know, that it's just, he's so, you know, hard that, you know, it, you put a gun in his face and it doesn't matter. He falls asleep. You know, it means nothing to him.
Exactly.
And, it's a wonderful scene that just, we used the word off kilter earlier. I mean, as you're going through this movie, you've got, you know, up till that point, really, it's very much, you know, feels like, all right, well, it's this crime thing, but it's got this, you know, these humorous twists to it and such. But that scene is, you know, something that's just absurdist. It's, you know, it's out of a completely different movie. And yet it somehow all meshes together very well. I mean, there's in all of these moments where the film just goes off in a strange direction and does a sequence like something you'd pull out of like a Police Academy movie, whether it's this scene we were just talking about or Sandra Bullock giving Liam Neeson an enema. I mean, those scenes seem like they shouldn't fit in the world they're building here, but it strangely meshes together very, very well.
It's really interesting. Yeah. And, you know, against all odds and frankly, all logic, Charlie and Fulvio begin to form this friendship, despite the fact that that the jobs that they hold, that Charlie is undercover and Fulvio is a gangster. And, you know, it's the little moments where this movie shines. Like there's a scene where Charlie and Fulvio are talking about Italy, which Fulvio claims is the most beautiful place in the world, despite the fact he's never been there. And Charlie's like, well, I changed planes in Rome once. And Fulvio's like, really? What was it like? And, you know, Charlie tells him this whole story about buying potato chips at the airport. And there's a sweetness to it. And, you know, he's like, what was the gift shop like? And, you know, Charlie's like, oh, beautiful leather goods.
Well, and the weird thing about that scene is I found it very relatable because I mean, I don't travel anymore, but it used to be for my job. I traveled quite a bit. And the one time I've ever been on an overseas trip, I went to Singapore, which involved it involved a stopover in Hong Kong. So, you know, I can say I've been to Hong Kong, but really I've only ever been to the Hong Kong airport, you know? Sure. And I was like, hey, I can relate. Hong Kong was great. At least the airport was great, you know? I guess, you know, am I saying too much about myself that I could relate to many aspects of this film?
No, I mean, I think we all can. I think this is a movie that people will connect to because, you know, everybody's struggling with something. Hopefully we're not as unhappy as the characters in this film who are sort of fundamentally unhappy. But, you know, everybody's got these little things and we all kind of are just kind of trying to cover them up and not have them intrude upon our business or our daily lives. Everybody in this movie, all with the exception of the Sandra Bullock character, who is kind of like this pure figure. She's almost an aspirational figure, you know, for Liam Neeson. It's like, I want to get away with her to go somewhere for my ocean view. But with the exception of her character, all of the characters are wrestling with imposter syndrome in one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I would actually say that it's really, I mean, you talked about kind of the themes of masculinity and things like that. And I mean, really, it's the male characters that are the ones having the issue. I mean, the female characters, even Fulvio's wife, you know, I mean,
Fulvio's wife knows who she is. You're absolutely right.
She's a strong character. You know, Sandra Bullock is a strong character in a different way.
Yeah. And they share one scene together where you're like, these two will not get along. These two would not go out for coffee afterwards. There's no way. Like, it's, you know.
Well, let's talk about Sandra Bullock here for a minute because, I mean, you know, ultimately this was her project. Her company produced it and, you know, she had the guts or the wisdom or whatever you want to call it to, you know, take a supporting role. I mean, it's very much a supporting role. She doesn't even show up in the movie until 30 minutes in.
Yeah.
But, you know, still, I think, I mean, you know, we're saying how this movie brings in a lot of different elements. I mean, you know, at times it's a crime thing. At times it's a mob thing. And here you get the introduction of Sandra Bullock's character and, you know, it's a rom-com.
Yeah.
And she's bringing, you know, what she brings to, you know, so many other rom-coms she's been, maybe with a little bit more of an edge, I would say. But I mean, I didn't think it felt out of place at all. I mean,
no.
You described her as being, you know, this light. She is, you know, the light in all this madness. And I think, I mean, Sandra Bullock is a perfect actress for that type of role.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, she's a delight. You know, there's no question. And it was, you know, you're right. She produced it. She clearly was like, oh, I could do this role. That will help get it made. You know, if it's got Sandra Bullock as in addition to Liam Neeson. And you know, it's not even like that. You know, she's not second name in the credits. Like she's a little further down because it's not, she's not, you know, she's kind of a tertiary part of Charlie's story, an important part. And maybe ultimately the most important part in the end, but he's got to get through this deal. He's got to get through this undercover operation in order to get to the other side with her. And so she doesn't have a huge amount of screen time, but she's great when she's there.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about, too, some other, you know, some of the other colorful characters around this thing. One of the things that I do love about this movie is there are a lot of colorful characters, you know, surrounding absolutely. Liam Neeson, Oliver Platt, etc. And chief among them are the guys in group therapy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What a terrific collection of actors that is. I mean, you have Richard Schiff, you have Paul Ben Victor, you know, and they are just, you know, they kind of go back to these group therapy scenes time and again. And all these guys are just sort of, you know, they're all 40 to mid 40s to mid 50s. They're all wrestling with sort of the disappointments of their lives. And they're talking about how, you know, this is difficult in my job. And, you know, I have to deal with the person from marketing. And Liam Neeson would be like, yeah, well, they stormed into the room and they killed everybody inside. And, you know, it's like you see them just kind of with their mouths hanging open. Oh, wow, this guy's job could really kill him. It is fascinating.
I mean, they're so enthralled with what Liam Neeson is saying. I mean, it's the type of thing where you almost get the impression they're watching this and going, well, yeah, I mean, his life is really messed up, but I'd kind of like to be him, you know, which ultimately kind of plays into the ending of the movie.
Yes, it does. Yes.
Well, and let's talk about, you know, kind of the ultimate, the ending and I mean, the whole kind of crime plot of things. I mean, I got to admit, if I have a complaint about the movie, it's that I do think the whole, the inner workings of the money laundering and the drug dealer plot, you know, it's one of those movies that, you know, that type of thing, it kind of gets almost too complicated for its own good.
Yeah, they're doing a thing with money. I don't know what it is. Like, they're doing a thing that with money and commodities and you know, that's all I really understand about it, because I don't understand that world at all. But at the end, there's like a big deal, and both the mafia and the Colombians are going to be bringing $20 million in cash each to this big deal that's going to get, you know, turned into a commodity so the money can come out laundered. I guess that's the idea, is the money comes out clean and they make a profit off of it. So they, you know, you put in a few million dollars, you get a little bit more, and it's no longer, you know, tainted money. So but they're meeting it. Of course, it's in like an old, like abandoned factory kind of setting, and
always, you know, is
always is on the edge of town. It's always on the edge of town, and so at the end of the movie, you have, you know, each side is bringing $20 million, but what they don't realize is that the guy who's sort of the Wall Street slimy guy is actually working with Liam Neeson's boss at the DEA, who's played by Mitch Pileggi from The X-Files, basically like playing an evil Walter Skinner from The X-Files. Like, he looks the same. Like, he did this on an off day of shooting an X-Files episode. But, like, he is actually kill everybody and take the money and split it with the mob boss, who actually says, as a condition of going into this deal with the rogue DA agent, says, I want to make sure my son-in-law gets killed. Make sure he gets killed in the crossfire. So guns are pulled. The thing that Liam Neeson has been fearing this whole movie is that guns are going to be pulled and he's going to be killed. And guns are pulled, and, you know, the Colombian shoots the Italian shoots the Colombian, then the corrupt DEA guy, and then in comes some FBI guys who pull him out of there, and then we realize that the FBI guys are not real FBI guys. therapy dressed up as FBI guys who have come to help their buddy out and get him away with this. And he takes Fulvia with him, which is so great. Because there's a great moment as Liam Neeson's goes, and it's like, he's a cop. And Oliver Platt looks at him with, and by this point, they have developed a friendship. Oliver Platt looks at him with such disappointment in his eyes. And he says, "You're a cop? I thought you were my friend." And Liam Neeson says, "I am. We just met under bad circumstances." But he pulls him out of there, and they are able to escape. And with about I think half the cash, they get one of the two suitcases out and get on a boat, and they head off into the sunset. It's a terrific movie. It's just one of those. It's not going to be for everybody, but if you want to sort of see something that's a little more offbeat and hopefully it connects with you, I can't recommend it highly enough.
Yeah. I mean, it was a great surprise, and that ending, it was a great surprise. I mean, I love that, you know, when the group therapy guys come in.
Oh.
You know, we basically figure it out as Liam Neeson is. You know, we see that, you know, he looks over and he notices that, you know, there's a label for a toy company on one of the guns. You know,
at the guy, and he's got a jacket with like yellow letters that say FBI, but underneath that is the members only like tag on the jacket,
right.
And it's like, oh, and then you see Richard Schiff there, and it's like, oh my goodness.
And with that, though, they don't even, it's not like the guys then like whip off their helmets and goggles and go, "Hey, it's me," or anything that. It's, you know, it's not goofy.
No,
it,
no, no.
It they actually makes out perfect of sense.
And Sandra Bullock is waiting with a boat.
Wouldn't that be a great way to end? You know.
What
Sandra
what
Bullock's waiting there for you with a boat.
Exactly. I mean, honestly, you know. But it's a really interesting movie, and I was delighted that you picked this, because I was like, that's, you know, it doesn't even feel like a forgotten movie. It feels like nobody ever remembered it to begin with. Like, something has to be known to be forgotten. I feel like this movie never got known, and I wouldn't have known about it if we hadn't happened to run across it on cable sometime in like 2001, 2002, and it was like, this movie is fantastic. What is this? And we discovered a lot of movies that way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's clearly something that it seems like, you know, the studio just didn't know what to do with it.
Oh,
they
no.
did, you know, they look at the things and they're like, I can't market this thing. I don't know what to do with this thing.
Honestly, I can't blame them. It's a weird movie. I'm not sure how you sell that. You sell it by just, you know, people watching it and word of mouth. That's it. That's the best you could do.
Well, hopefully we will contribute to that a little bit
here.
So, yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break here. We'll hear from another LAMP Podcasting Network show, and then we'll be back with our movie recommendations here on the Forgotten Filmcast.
You'll save money and time. You'll get the best of merchandise and service when you patronize these good neighbors. Shop with them regularly for friendly service and money-saving values.
Hi, everyone. This is Tim Costa.
I'm Hermano Da Silva.
And this is Walter Vinci.
And together we are the First Time Watchers Podcast.
Each week we choose a movie to review that none of us has seen.
Watch it together.
And then discuss.
These movies could be new.
Or old.
Or on our list of shame.
You can find us on iTunes by searching for the First Time Watchers Podcast.
As well as on Stitcher.
And we love interacting with our listeners, so if you have any suggestions, send us a tweet.
An email.
Or post to our Facebook page.
We'd love to hear from you.
That's right. I mean, it's all about interaction.
And talk about what we love, movies.
And you don't have to worry about us going on and on about this and that and the other. And
Shut up.
Hi, everybody. This is Todd. Just a quick reminder that you can now help support the Forgotten Filmcast through Patreon. For just a few bucks a month, you can support this show and earn access to some bonus features in the process. Visit patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast to learn more.
We've brought back those good old time flavors, and today they're better than ever. All these delicious treats are waiting for you at the refreshment stand. Delicious fresh popcorn, ice cold cola, tasting candy you know and love. They're all ready for you now, so you won't have to miss any of the feature. Come and get them.
All right, welcome back. It's time for our movie recommendations. This is the part of the show where each of us gets to talk about another movie, something that we've really enjoyed that we want to spread the word about. It could be a forgotten film. It could be an old classic, something new in theaters or on streaming. It can be absolutely anything. So, Chris, what is your recommendation?
Well, I'm very excited because I'm going to get to do something I never get to do on my own podcast. And that's talk about the last film I saw in a movie theater. And Ooh. That's a little known, obscure film called Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
I haven't had the chance yet, but I am anxiously
trying to get to the theater. I have a recommendation that I have, a spoiler-free recommendation, because it is in theaters currently, and people should go and check it out. Now, listen, I know that the Marvel Cinematic Universe often brings out strong feelings in people, both positive and negative. But I have to say, we saw Guardians 3, and I think it does an incredible job of bringing that trilogy to a conclusion. Like I said, I am not going to get into spoilers here because it's still in theaters. But I think what James Gunn has achieved in terms of building these character arcs over three films, it's really extraordinary. And I think there's something about the Guardians films that really sets them apart from some of the other Marvel movies. And for the record, I like Marvel Studios' work in general, but there's something very special and very personal in these films, and that continues to be true in the third and final installment. The actors, both live action and voice actors, are terrific, and there is something, there are just some genuinely special character moments in this third film. And honestly, if there's anything to connect Guardians of the Galaxy 3 and Gunshy, which on the surface seem like movies that could not be further apart, but that they are both basically about broken people trying to find a measure of healing. And they both are full of wonderful and quirky character moments. And I know there's people who may have become disenchanted with Marvel movies, but let me tell you, this is the one to see. It's extraordinary. It is honestly the whole trilogy and sort of the associated specials and that sort of thing. I just think it's really an extraordinary little corner of this sort of big gargantuan cinematic endeavor. And you know, it's a little, you know, I think it's just such a personal movie from James Gunn in the midst of, you know, a big summer tentpole. How often does that happen?
Yeah. Well, I can't speak to this new one because I haven't seen it yet, but I am absolutely in agreement that I think that the Guardians films have been among the highlights of the MCU. I mean, I've never gone through and ranked all 30 whatever.
Oh God, it's an impossible task.
I can very easily tell you though that, you know, what my pick is for the best of the MCU, and that is the original Guardians of the Galaxy. I think that is the best film of all of them.
It is in my top tier. I can't even go that far because it's tough to say. That's out of 30 films, that's real tough. But it's in the top tier. It's, you know, Black Panther and the first Guardians. I think the second Captain America movie. Like they're sort of the top tier of the MCU, and I think all three Guardians are really, when taken together, what an extraordinary achievement from James Gunn.
Well, and I think, too, that there's some of the best standout performances
when
it comes to the Guardians. I mean, Dave Bautista continues to blow me away.
He's great. I mean, you know, he doesn't appear on film, but my goodness, Bradley Cooper as Rocket is extraordinary. I mean, it is just, you know, he's not on camera, but that doesn't mean it's any less of a performance, and it's an extraordinary one. And honestly, Karen Gillan as Nebula, of all of those characters, the arc that Karen Gillan as Nebula has is just incredible. And you know, I liked her back on Doctor Who. I thought she was great on Doctor Who, and she's really soared in that character.
Yeah. Oh, looking forward to it for sure. All right. Well, the movie that I'm going to recommend, actually, you know, as you started talking about,
I'm very excited to hear what your movie is.
Well, as you started talking about Guardians of the MCU and stuff, I was like, well, you know who needs to be in the MCU, and he's not there yet. I'm pretty sure he's not there yet. From the movie we talked about today is Oliver Platt.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Oliver Platt I can't even imagine what role he should play in the MCU, but he's got to. There's got to be a place for him there somewhere.
Maybe he'd be a he'd be a great Galactus. I'd see all the planets. Oh my God! I'll buy it. You sell it, I'll buy it.
I had to think of another Oliver Platt film to recommend, and I think this is one that. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm gung-ho over this movie, but the thing that I remember about it and the thing that I liked most about it was Oliver Platt. And so that's why it came to mind. And also, I think it was an interesting, somewhat off-kilter character, kind of like what we're getting in Gunshy here, but very different. My mind went to the same year, actually, 2000, and Ready to Rumble.
I think I remember this movie, but I don't think I ever saw it. And he plays a pro wrestler, does he not?
He does. He plays this wrestler named Jimmy King, who's like, you know, he was like, you know, the Hulk Hogan of his time.
He was the
champ.
I can picture him in my mind, although I never saw the movie.
And then there's this plot by Joe Pantoliano, Joey Pants.
You can't go wrong with Joe Pantoliano.
Yeah, he's going to dethrone him and put a new guy in there. You know, so these two guys, played by David Arquette and Scott Kahn, they're like crushed because Jimmy the King is their favorite wrestler of all time. So they set out on this quest to save him from the depression that he's now in, bring him back and give him this triumphant return and defeat the you know, new champion in a cage match and all that kind of stuff. It's goofy, but it's got a lot of fun elements. I mean, it's somewhat of a road trip movie, and I really dig those.
Sure.
But, you know, again, this is a case where Oliver Platt just steals the show. He is fantastic as this aging, slightly out of shape, former wrestling great. And it's a performance that is very funny, but it's also got a lot of heart to it. You know, just like, you know, with the characters in the movie we talked about, you can sympathize with them. You can sympathize with this guy. And, you know, a big part of what makes it so engaging is just that Oliver Platt just brings so much to this movie. I'm not a wrestling guy, but, you know, it's got a bunch of actual wrestlers in it kind of filling things out. So I'm sure that, you know, people who are fans of that would really get into it. But, you know, for me, it's a movie that, yeah, I mean, it's not a stellar comedy, but Oliver Platt elevates it, and that makes it worthy of a recommendation for me.
Well, that's great. I'm going to check it out because, I remembered enough of it to have the image of Oliver Platt wearing a crown as a wrestler, and I like that was buried in the back of my brain. But I don't think I ever actually seen the movie. But I'll go check it out now.
Awesome. Well, Chris, I want to thank you for being on the show. Before I let you go,
having me. It's been a joy.
Oh, it was awesome. Please remind everybody of where they can find you and all the stuff you got going on.
Well, you can follow Get Me Another on Twitter and Instagram at Get Me Another Pod. And the podcast is available on Apple, on Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can find me on Twitter at Chris Iannacone. Just all one word. And check us out. Check me out. Check out the show. Most importantly, check out the show. I think we have a great time doing it. And every series that we do, the series usually lasts between 5 and 10 episodes. Everyone is a journey, and it feels like a journey. You know, you start with this sort of watershed movie, and you go and you follow it through all the different channels that and currents and eddies that it creates, and every one of them is a journey. It's been a joy to do it, and you know, hopefully we'll be doing it for a long time to come, because we have a list of potential series that it's long, you know, it's a long list.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks again for being on the show, and I'll be back to close things here in just a moment here on the Forgotten Filmcast. Well, everybody, that's going to do it for this episode of the Forgotten Filmcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to read other reviews of Forgotten Films, you'll find them over at the Forgotten Films blog. That's at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Forgotten Films. That's films with a Z. And you can like Forgotten Films at Facebook. I'd love to hear your questions, comments, and feedback about the show, so please email me at forgottenfilmcast@gmail.com. And please consider throwing some support our way by visiting our Patreon page, patreon.com/forgottenfilmcast. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, go watch some old movies. We'll see you again next time.
I really hate watermelon.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.